The examples you're citing also involved ground troops. You said time for Maduro to go.
Yeah.
That sounds a lot like regime change. Are you talking about troops on the ground?
I'll let the president speak to that. I'm talking about a briefing that would expand military operations potentially from the sea to the land. It is time for Maduro to go. It was time for Ortega to go. You know, the Monroe Doctrine has been robustly applied by President Trump. So these military assets are moving forward to deal with a country that's got blood on its hands when it comes to Americans by flooding our country with drugs from Venezuela and Colombia. So I hope Maduro would leave peacefully, but I don't think he's going to stay around much longer. I think President Trump is tired of Venezuela being used as a staging platform to poison.
This is my video update on this Monday morning, October the 27th, coming to you from Nicosia, Cyprus. Let's talk about some news. And let's start things off with Trump's response to the Burevestnik, the new Russian missile. And Trump was asked about the missile, and he said, "I don't like it. I don't like it at all." That's not what Trump said. Trump said that the U.S. has subs right off the coast of Russia, nuclear subs off the coast of Russia, and that Russia doesn't play with us and we don't play with them, he said, and both sides are constantly testing missiles. He also said that the United States does not need to fly 8,000 or 14,000 miles to hit Russia or something like that, is what he said. And then he went on to mock Putin and Russia. He went on to say that instead of playing around with new missiles, coming up with new missiles, Putin should end the conflict. That would have taken a normal military or any other military 1 week to complete. They would have taken Ukraine in 1 week. It has now taken Putin 4 years, he said. So he mocked Putin. Didn't seem too concerned with the Burevestnik. And that was his reply to a question from a reporter about the Burevestnik. Dmitry Medvedev, he posted on X, "Congratulations to all Russia's friends on the successful test of the unlimited range Burevestnik cruise missile with a nuclear engine and warhead." There's a little lightning and smiley face emoji from Medvedev's post on X. Oh, what a world we live in. So that's Trump's response to the Burevestnik. That's Medvedev's post congratulating the Russian military on the Burevestnik. And what about the flamingo? What about Ukraine's answer to long-range missiles, Russia long-range missiles with the development of the flamingo long-range missile? Well, according to Zelensky, the flamingo has some problems. We got some problems with the Ukraine Flamingo missile production. Zelensky acknowledged technical and financial problems with the production of the Flamingo. But Zelensky said that money is coming any day now, and that Flamingo production will proceed in 2026. The very big and slow Flamingo missile, which I think was just a way for the collective West and for Ukraine to get the narrative rolling on long-range missiles and Tomahawks and stuff like that. That's what I think the Flamingo was all about. But anyway, that's an update on the Flamingo, which is having some money problems and some production problems. So Lavrov talked about diplomacy with the United States during a podcast with a Hungarian channel, a Hungarian YouTube podcast channel, interviewed the Russian foreign minister. And Lavrov, he said that it is the hawks in Europe that are causing a problem between the United States and Russia, blaming it on the hawks in Europe. They're the ones that are poisoning the mind of Donald J. Trump, preventing any type of normalization or rapprochement between the United States and Russia. It's all being put on the hawks in Europe. According to Lavrov, Trump wanted to understand the root causes of the conflict in Ukraine and was open to a negotiation with Russia. Those hawks in Europe, they spoiled it. They ruined it. Lavrov also said that it came to, that for Russia, it came as a surprise that the Trump administration started to fall back on ceasefire talk when they had agreed in Alaska to address the root causes of the problem, to go directly into a negotiation after the Alaska summit. And then because of the intervention of the hawks in Europe, they got Trump talking again about a ceasefire, which is something that Russia and the United States agreed they would not pursue. European hawks undermine Russia-U.S. negotiations, according to Lavrov. Without interference, diplomacy would have already yielded results, the Russian foreign minister has said. It was determined by all that the best way to end the horrific war between Russia and Ukraine is to go directly to a peace agreement, which would end the war and not a mere ceasefire agreement. This is the key, he said. The latest shifts in the U.S. rhetoric, when people now say nothing but a ceasefire, immediate ceasefire, and then history will judge. It's a very radical change, Lavrov stated. He's right about that. He is right. After Alaska, even Trump posted on Truth Social that a ceasefire is not the way forward and we need to enter into direct talks. And then Trump walked everything back. He took everything back. And he is now once again promoting a ceasefire. That's his position now. The position of Rubio and Kellogg. There's some alarm going off over there. Not sure what the alarm is for, but anyway, it's kind of annoying. Anyway, the pocket in Pokrovsk-Mirnograd, the encirclement in this key region, is closed or about to close. And the ultimatum that the Russian military, that Putin gave to the Ukraine military, the Ukraine soldiers to surrender, is over today. That ultimatum is going to finish today, and the Russian military will then clear out the encirclement in Pokrovsk and Mirnograd. So we'll see today exactly what happens there. Even Zelensky had to post a TikTok video where he admitted that the situation in Pokrovsk is critical. And he even admitted that the Russian military was now operating in Pokrovsk, in the city center of Pokrovsk. So even the Green Goblin had to admit to the catastrophe in Pokrovsk. So yesterday it was announced that the United States and China, they have agreed to, let's move away from the alarm. What am I doing? I'm moving towards the noise. Let's move away from the noise. They admitted to agreeing on a framework for some sort of a trade deal, or a framework to move forward in some sort of a trade negotiation. So that was announced yesterday. And Trump is now heading to Japan, and then he's going to make his way to South Korea. On the 30th, he meets with Xi Jinping. I think that's the schedule. Trump also said that while he's in South Korea, he would like to take up a meeting with Kim Jong-un. He said if he's up for it, the North Korean leader, then Trump is ready to meet with him. So that was also announced by Trump. But the framework agreement between the United States and China, it kind of takes us back to the beginning, right? We've come all this way, 7, 8, 9 months of going back and forth, and 100% tariffs and 50% tariffs and 200% tariffs and all of these things that have been going on over the past 8, 9 months, rare earth export controls. And we're now kind of back to the beginning. That's what the framework pretty much is. It's basically a return to day one of the Trump administration between the United States and China, and some of the information on the tentative agreement or this framework is that there's going to be an extension to the rare earth export controls for about a year, and China said they're going to buy a whole bunch of U.S. soybeans and stuff like that. But the U.S. Treasury Secretary, Scott Bessent, he signaled that there is some sort of a framework in place now, and that China has agreed on rare earths and soybeans. That's what Scott Bessent said. And now we're just going to be waiting for the Trump and Xi Jinping meeting to take place, and the trade part is just one aspect of the meeting between Trump and Xi. The other part of the meeting between Trump and Xi is to move China away from Russia. That's going to be a big part of Trump's diplomacy with the leader of China, to convince Xi to ditch Russia, to stop purchasing Russian oil, Russian energy, and to help the United States put the squeeze on Putin, to turn the screws on Putin, as the UK Telegraph posted in an article which made my clown world for today, to put the screws on Putin. That is going to be top of Trump's agenda in his meeting with Xi Jinping. Basically, the United States is going to be asking China to help defeat Russia, so that the United States can then move forward with escalation with China. Right? Help us defeat Russia, so that we can then move on to taking you guys on. That's the ask from the United States. You would have to be crazy if you're China to go along with this. But we'll see. We'll see what they discuss. So far, the signals from Beijing is that they're not going to even entertain the thought of ditching Russia or ditching Russian energy or anything like that. The reports coming out of China are that they feel they have a very strong hand against Trump in the United States, and they are going to press for all of their conditions to be met by the Trump administration. So anyway, that's an update there. And we can now move on to an article from the Sunday Times, the UK Sunday Times. The UK media is in overdrive, covering the Ukraine conflict, providing cover for the collective West, for Zelensky, given the news about the fall in Pokrovsk and Kupiansk, and they're in overdrive trying to cover all of this up and trying to paint a picture of a situation that's not only not bad for Ukraine, but is actually advantageous for Ukraine, and that the Russian military and economy is collapsing. So the UK media is writing a bunch of articles about the terrible state of Russia and the Russian military and the Russian economy. And in the Sunday Times article, they interviewed Donald Tusk, the very pro-Ukrainian, uber-globalist leader of Poland. And the article has the title, Donald Tusk, Ukraine is ready to fight on. For three more years, the Polish PM feels bitter satisfaction that his years of warnings about Russia and the extremely ordinary Putin has been vindicated. Yeah, Putin's pretty ordinary for Donald Tusk. The brainiac genius, master strategist that is Donald Tusk. For him, Putin is just ordinary, man. He's ordinary. Yeah, that's what Tusk said. Tusk also said that Zelensky is ready to fight for another 3 years. Ready and willing and prepared to fight for another 3 years. He said that Ukraine, the collective West, does not want this conflict to go on for 10 years. But for 3 years, they're ready to continue this conflict. And what the EU has to do is to support Zelensky, to support Ukraine, keep on providing money and weapons to Zelensky so that eventually they can defeat Russia and get the very ordinary, the extremely ordinary Putin to capitulate. That is the goal, according to Donald Tusk. The European Union, NATO, the collective West, they have this three-year timeline. I've mentioned this before in previous videos. They need to keep the conflict going for another 2 to 3 years because NATO and the EU, they believe that they will be in a position in 3 years' time to actually take on Russia in some sort of a conflict, some sort of a hot war. They need 2 to 3 to 4 years, 2027, 28, 29, 30. They have this timeline in place where they feel they will build up their military to the point where they will be able to take on Russia. And they feel that if Ukraine can continue this conflict for another 2 to 3 to 4 years, they will significantly weaken Russia. And so Russia will be weakened. They will be in a strong position to then make a move against Russia, a military move against Russia. So that is why they're always talking about this 3 year plus or minus time frame that is needed. The globalists, they always put it at 3 years plus or minus. So that is Tusk. And let's talk about Venezuela. Let's talk about Venezuela and Lindsey Graham. He was on Face the Nation, and he said that Maduro needs to go. He said, hopefully Maduro will leave peacefully, just leave on his own, right? Just go, just get on a plane and leave. That is what Graham said. But if that doesn't happen, well, then he said there could be a land operation against Venezuela and an eventual regime change. That is what Lindsey Graham said. Always, always excited about war, that Lindsey Graham. It's time for Maduro to go. I hope Maduro would leave peacefully, but I don't think he's going to stay around much longer. And then we had the Nobel Peace Prize winner, Maria Machado, Maria Corina Machado, who said that democracy will soon come to Venezuela. Democracy in the form of regime change. Democracy in the form of overthrowing the the legitimate government of Venezuela will come any day now, according to the Nobel Peace Prize winner. You got to keep in mind that she is a Nobel Peace Prize winner advocating for chaos and regime change and destruction in Venezuela, advocating for a U.S. military operation in Venezuela, the Nobel Peace Prize winner. So that is what she said. And that is what Lindsey Graham told Face the Nation. And so we had the big news from Argentina yesterday, the big election news, which saw a big election win for Milei and his party. They picked up a lot more seats in the parliament, in the Congress, than was expected. Actually, they have a strong majority, from what I understand, and they will be able to basically do as they wish in government. Milei and his party, not even the most positive forecasts of the elections in Argentina for Milei had his party doing this well. I mean, he really, really did well in these elections. Milei and his party. Trump was happy about the results. He posted on Truth, "Congratulations to President Javier Milei on his landslide victory in Argentina. He is doing a wonderful job. Our confidence in him was justified by the people of Argentina." And CNN has an article with the title, "Victory for Milei's Party in Argentina Midterms, Seen as a Test for His Austerity Cuts and Trump Support." In this article from CNN, they say that the voter turnout in these elections was unusually low, 68% voter turnout, the lowest in more than a decade, according to media outlets. This is from CNN. And CNN also goes on to explain the landslide victory from Milei as Argentina, the voters, not wanting to risk reverting back to the policies of previous governments, the catastrophic policies of previous governments. And even though Milei is seeking a bailout, even though Milei has all kinds of corruption scandals and stuff like that, the voters said, you know what, give him some more time, give Milei some more time. Let's not just go back to the way things were, and let's see if he can produce the results that he has promised. So let's give him the big win. And that's how CNN explained this landslide victory from Milei. Foreign investors have been impressed by the government's ability to significantly reduce monthly inflation from 12.8% before Milei's inauguration to 2.1% last month, while achieving a fiscal surplus and enacting sweeping deregulation measures. To support Milei, the Trump administration offered a bailout potentially worth $40 billion, including a $20 billion currency swap that is already signed and a proposed $20 billion debt investment facility. Yeah, and then there's the $20 billion, the $40 billion actually, $20 billion and $20 billion swap. And that also played a significant role in Milei's big victory. And Trump even said about a week ago that if Milei does not win, then the United States is not going to give the $40 billion to Argentina. So there's that as well as a factor for Milei's big victory. But anyway, that is the result of these elections. A very, very big win for Milei and his party. I think we can now do a clown world. And in this clown world, we will go back to the Telegraph. Actually, before I get to a clown world, just a quick update on the Louvre robbery. The French authorities are saying this was an inside job, and that they have now two or three suspects in custody. And two suspects in custody, because I think the total was three or four people were involved in this robbery, and they have two suspects in custody. I think one of the guys was trying to flee the country or something like that. And they grabbed him, and then they got another guy. And that's the update on the Louvre investigation from the French authorities. And now we can do a clown world. And today's clown world takes us back to the UK, to the Telegraph, where they are reporting that the Kremlin is very concerned about a coup attempt. Russian President Vladimir Putin, very, very worried about some sort of a coup. The Telegraph's article has the title, "Putin Fears Another Coup as Russia Finally Begins to Buckle, Panic in the Kremlin as It Runs Out of Cards to Play, Just as Trump Turns the Screws." That's right. Trump is turning those screws. I like it. I like it. I'm going to turn those screws because I like it. He's turning the screws on Putin in a big, big way. According to the Telegraph, the Russian economy is crumbling. The banks are collapsing. And Putin is panicking. He is very, very scared about a coup, and he's very afraid about one Khodorkovsky. Remember that guy from Yukos fame? Remember him? According to the Telegraph, Putin is very afraid of Khodorkovsky. Who he released from prison, right? And now I believe he lives in Switzerland, if I'm not mistaken, and he has a whole kind of movement to try and remove the Putin government and cause a regime change in Russia. He has some sort of a movement or an organization which is actively trying to remove the Russian president. But the Telegraph has decided to resurrect Khodorkovsky. They actually say in this article that the destruction of Yukos was the beginning of the end of any kind of market economy or transparency in Russia. This goes back to 2002 or 2003. And it was the dismantling of Yukos that destroyed any chance of a market economy or transparency. Basically, this is the UK's way of saying that Putin spoiled our plundering of Russia, and we're very upset about that. We're very angry at Putin for ruining our plundering and pillaging game that we had going on in Russia. That's what they're upset about when it comes to Putin. That's why they hate Putin so much. That's why the UK and the Europeans and the US, that's why they despise Putin and Russia so much, is because he came into power and he put an end to all of the corruption and the Yukos type of companies pillaging the country and its energy resources. They've never forgiven Putin for that. So that's what the Telegraph says. And it talks a lot, the article talks a lot about Russia's banking sector. And it talks a lot about inflation and business loans and how businesses are starting to buckle and how the banking sector is in a big mess. And And I think I know why they talk so much about the banking sector. If I had to take a guess, I would say that the UK, what they're trying to do is they're trying to create some fear and panic in the banking sector, right? They're hoping to create some sort of a panic scenario in Russia's banking sector and amongst the Russian population, fearing that that the banks are in trouble, leading to some sort of run or something like that. This is typical collective West psyop info war stuff. Anyway, that is that's the Telegraph. They're talking about a Kremlin fearing a coup. Even though Putin's approval rating is at 80% and he has the full support of the military, UK Telegraph, did you not see yesterday's meeting between Putin and Gerasimov and the Russian military command, talking about Pokrovsk and Mirnograd and Kupiansk, and talking about the Burevestnik? Did you not see that whole press conference? How do you get a coup going in a country when the leader has an approval rating of 80% and the full support of the military? How do you get a coup going under those conditions? Anyway, that's the clown world. UK, MI6, propaganda also serves as a good distraction, a good cover for the military catastrophe in Donetsk. Running articles like this or running interviews with Donald Tusk, all of this stuff serves as a good distraction away from the catastrophic situation on the front line for Zelensky and co, for NATO, for Trump, for Trump's proxy army, and for NATO's proxy army, which is facing a defeat, a big defeat in Pokrovsk and in Donetsk. And so you run articles like this, and no doubt that Rubio and Kellogg are going to give this article to Trump, and they're going to say, you see, President, read this article from the Telegraph. You see, you're right. The Russian economy is in tatters. The Russian economy is in tatters, grasshopper. You see, President Trump, we're correct. You're on the right trajectory with Putin. Anyway, that's the video. TheDuran.locals.com. We're on X. We're on Rumble. We are on Telegram. And we are also on Substack. I will see everyone tomorrow. Take care.